January 25th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 1944 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again today. We have paragraph 11 of chapter 5, in other words, paragraph 511, of the C-cubed article, The Crucible of Credible Creed. The Papyrus Hermitage number 1116A, Leningrad, purporting to give accounts from a regnal year 18, and containing the throne name of Pharaoh Amenhotep II, includes Hazor as one of a group of cities to which grain and corn were supplied regularly in trade with Egypt. His year 18 being 1423 BCE, and that's in the chronology we're using in this article. I'm not sure what chronology we have later. It may be, some people put 1442 as his year one, but that's not much different from 1440. And I think we might put 1439 as his year one too, because that's the end of the reign of Thutmose III, but it's still very close to being 1423 for his year 18. The A1 pottery in the cave at Hazor, little ones, and A1 pottery dates from 1425 to 1400 BCE, would correlate well with this year 18 for Pharaoh Amenhotep II, 1425 to 1400, and 1423 being in the middle of that, within those two limits. How does the larger collection of A2 pottery, which is a later time than A1, correlate as during or shortly after the rule of Pharaoh Thutmose IV? And of course, we say that partly because we have the scarab of Thutmose IV that was found in Hazor. Whilst the word of God says that Joshua burned Hazor, this city appears to have somehow recovered by 1375 BCE. I need to check something here. Make sure I'm reading the right paragraph. Yeah, I am. Okay. For it is a stronghold again when Jabin is defeated in 1234 BCE. The 1234 number comes from some archaeological study mentioned previously by Mr. Yadin, the archaeologist in that case. The destruction of 1452 BCE by Joshua, that's in our chronology, the 1452, included the killing of all the souls in Hazor. Let me just fix this problem we have here. Just notice we've got a problem. We've got to go down to 511 again. Well, I need to frame the paragraph here. Right, there it is there. So this is our paragraph. The destruction of 1452 BCE by Joshua included the killing of all the souls in Hazor, but a conquest of this city was mentioned by Pharaoh Amenhotep II. Interestingly, Pharaoh Amenhotep II mentioned he had conquered the city, not destroyed it, but conquered it in his year 3, which was, according to the chronology we use in this article, 1438 BCE. Again, that would be very close to what we later on decide also for his year 3. 1438 is very, very close to being the same number as what we later on might have adopted. And so the city in some way quickly revived, because it's only 14 years after 1452 when the city was burned to the ground. Well, that's not completely unrealistic to think that there would be people who moved back into the city after it was burned and, you know, rebuilt small shelters, or, you know, moved into the city because of the structures that were already in the city that they could use. It's not very unbelievable, perhaps, but it's important that we pay attention to these details, isn't it, little children? Because we want to know, does our chronology really make sense? For example, if we'd moved the date of Amenhotep up 14 years, it could not have been true. He couldn't have conquered the city the same year that Joshua had destroyed the city, so our chronology would be proven false if that had been the case. But it didn't happen that way. So the other thing is, the dating of Hatshepsut remains how consistent with this. And we see that our dating of Hatshepsut, which is the who, rather, is the topic of this chapter, is quite consistent with this, because if we had raised her 14 years, we'd have the same problem of raising Amenhotep II into the same year when the city of Hazor, along with Jericho and Ai, were destroyed by Joshua and the Israelites. Although it could have happened within a short space of a year, perhaps the year following 1452, when they destroyed Hazor. It's not, we don't know exactly how long it took to destroy these cities. But nonetheless, it's very true that this 14-year difference between Amenhotep year 3 and the destruction of Hazor by Joshua, assuming it happened in 1452 BCE, is a very fortuitous a blessing. It's a fortuitous time difference, which allows for the city to have recovered in some small way, enough so that it could have been conquered again. How did I write it? It was conquered, or? Right. Conquest, right. The conquest of the city by Amenhotep II. So, everything in our chronology remains unharmed by these pieces of evidence. And that's important, that we do those things that are required by what's called due diligence, where we check everything to see whether our chronology holds up under scrutiny. And that's, we're using our chronology also to test these facts and see whether the facts make sense in our chronology. And if they didn't, of course, we'd have to consider altering the chronology, which is very much more difficult, you know, to do than it might first appear. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 2 is our proverb for today, little children. It says, give a portion to 7 or even to 8, for you do not know what calamity will occur on the earth. Wise words, are they not? Oh my goodness. I know when my wife and I invested in the stock market years ago, during the internet bubble, we invested in the internet, and some of the companies we always bought or held 7 or 8 different companies at the same time. We didn't want to just restrict ourselves, because this proverb is so true. Some of the stocks go down and some go up. So if you hold 8 of them, you've got a better chance to make profit. But you really had to pay attention to the markets every day. And since I don't want to do that any longer, I'm not interested in following the market every day, because I have other things to do, so I don't invest in the stock market these days. Let's go on to 2 Kings chapter 9. Is that the next one? I think so. And Elisha the prophet, for his part, yes, called one of the sons of the prophets and then said to him, gird up your loins, and take this flask of oil in your hand and go to Ramoth Gilead. When you have come in there, see Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi there, and you must come in and make him get up from the midst of his brothers and bring him into the innermost chamber. And you must take the flask of oil and pour it out upon his head and say, this is what Jehovah has said. I do anoint you as king over Israel. And you must open the door and flee and not wait. And the attendant, the prophet's attendant, got on his way to Ramoth Gilead. When he came in, why, there the chiefs of the military force were seated. He now said, there is a word I have for you, O chief, that this Jehu said, for which one of all of us? Then he said, for you, O chief. So he got up and came into the house, and he proceeded to pour the oil out upon his head and say to him, this is what Jehovah the God of Israel has said. I do anoint you as king over Jehovah's people, that is, over Israel. And you must strike down the house of Ahab your lord. And I must avenge the blood of my servants, the prophets, and the blood of all the servants of Jehovah at the hand of Jezebel. And the whole house of Ahab must perish. And I must cut off from Ahab anyone urinating against a wall, which we know means the male gender, and any helpless and worthless one in Israel. And I must constitute the house of Ahab like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha, the son of Ahijah. And Jezebel the dogs will eat up in the tract of land at Jezreel, and there will be no one burying her. With that, he opened the door and went fleeing. As for Jehu, he went out to the servants of his lord, and they began to say to him, is everything all right? Why did this crazy man come into you? But he said to them, you yourselves well know the man and his sort of talk. But they said, it is false. Tell us, please. Then he said, it was like this and like that that he talked to me, saying, this is what Jehovah has said, I do anoint you as king over Israel. At this they hurriedly took each one his garment and put it under him upon the bare steps. And they began to blow the horn and say, Jehu has become king. And Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi, proceeded to conspire against Jehoram. And Jehoram himself had happened to be keeping guard at Ramoth Gilead, he with all Israel, because of Hazael, the king of Syria. Later, Jehoram the king returned to get healed at Jezreel from the wounds that the Syrians got to inflict upon him when he fought Hazael, the king of Syria. Jehu now said, if your soul agrees, do not let anyone go out and escape from the city to go and make report in Jezreel. And Jehu began to ride and go to Jezreel, for Jehoram was lying there, and Ahaziah, the king of Judah himself, had gone down to see Jehoram. And the watchman was standing upon the tower in Jezreel, and he got to see the heaving mass of Jehu's men as he was coming. And he at once said, there is a heaving mass of men that I am seeing. At that Jehoram said, take a cavalryman and send him to meet them, and let him say, is there peace? Accordingly, a rider on a horse went to meet him and said, this is what the king has said, is there peace? But Jehu said, what do you have to do with peace? Get around to my rear. And the watchman went on to report, saying, the messenger came as far as to them, but he has not returned. So he sent out a second rider on a horse, who, when he came to them, proceeded to say, this is what the king has said. Is there peace? But Jehu said, what do you have to do with peace? Get around to my rear. And the watchman went on to report, saying, he came as far as to them, but he has not returned, and the driving is like the driving of Jehu, the grandson of Nimshi, for it is with madness that he drives. At that Jehoram said, hitch up. So his war chariot was hitched up, and Jehoram, the king of Israel, and Ahaziah, the king of Judah, went out, each one in his own war chariot. As they continued on out to meet Jehu, they got to find him in the tract of land of Naboth, the Jezreelite. And it came about that as soon as Jehoram saw Jehu, he immediately said, "Is there peace, Jehu?" But he said, "What peace could there be as long as there are the fornications of Jezebel, your mother, and her many sorceries?" At once Jehoram made a turn with his hands that he might flee, and said to Ahaziah, "There is trickery, Ahaziah." And Jehu himself filled his hand with a bow and proceeded to shoot Jehoram between the arms, so that the arrow came out at his heart, and he collapsed in his war chariot. He now said to Bidkar, his adjutant, "Lift him up, throw him into the tract of the field of Naboth the Jezreelite, for remember, I and you were riding teams behind Ahab his father." And Jehovah himself lifted up this pronouncement against him. "Certainly the blood of Naboth and the blood of his sons I saw yesterday," is the utterance of Jehovah. "And I shall certainly repay you in this tract of land," is the utterance of Jehovah. "So now lift him up, throw him into the tract of land, according to the word of Jehovah." And Ahaziah, the king of Judah himself, saw it and took to flight by the way of the garden house. Later Jehu went in pursuit of him and said, "Him also, strike him down." So they struck him down while in the chariot on the way up to Gur, which is by Ibleam. And he continued his flight to Megiddo and got to die there. Then his servants carried him in a chariot to Jerusalem, so that they buried him in his grave with his forefathers in the city of David. And it was in the 11th year of Jehoram the son of Ahab that Ahaziah had become king over Judah. At length Jehu came to Jezreel, and Jezebel herself heard of it. And she proceeded to paint her eyes with black paint and do her head up beautifully and to look down through the window. And Jehu himself came in by the gate. She now said, "Did it go all right with Zimri, the killer of his lord?" If you recall, Zimri was a victim of his own treachery, and he came to be killed after he killed his own lord, who was the king at the time. At that, he raised his face toward the window and said, "Who is with me?" This is Jehu. "Who is with me? Who?" Immediately, two or three court officials looked down at him. So he said, "Let her drop." Then they let her drop, and some of her blood went spattering upon the wall and upon the horses. And he now trampled upon her. After that, he came on in and ate and drank, and then said, "You men, please take care of this accursed one and bury her, for she is the daughter of a king." When they went to bury her, they did not find anything of her but the skull and the feet and the palms of the hands. When they returned and told him, he went on to say, "It is the word of Jehovah that he spoke by means of his servant Elijah the Tishbite, saying, in the tract of land of Jezreel, the dogs will eat the flesh of Jezebel, and the dead body of Jezebel will certainly become as manure upon the face of the field in the tract of land of Jezreel, that they may not say, this is Jezebel." And that's the end of 2 Kings chapter 9. If you note what the prophet had said when he delivered the message to Jehoram here, to Jehu, rather, when he delivered the message to Jehu, to Jehoram. To whom did he deliver it? Let's find out. Jehoram was keeping God. Yeah. Well, there was a message delivered to Jehu first. Right. Okay, before that, yeah, Jehu had been told that the dogs would eat up Jezebel and no one would bury her. Right. Well, this was a message from Elisha, the prophet. Right. That was sent by means of a messenger to anoint Jehu and to tell this to Jehu. So it was a prophecy of Elisha that came true, that Jezebel was not buried. Her body didn't really survive the dogs. And now we're going to go on to Ezekiel 33, Jehovah willing here. Let's read this. Little ones, and the word of Jehovah proceeded to occur to me, saying, Son of man, speak to the sons of your people, and you must say to them, As regards a land, in case I bring upon it a sword, and the people of the land, one and all, actually take a man and set him as their watchman, and he really sees the sword coming upon the land and blows the horn and warns the people, and the hearer actually hears the horn, the sound of the horn, and he takes no warning at all, and the sword comes and takes him away, his own blood will come to be upon his own head. The sound of the horn he heard, but he took no warning. His own blood will come to be upon his own self. And had he himself taken warning, his own soul would have escaped. Clark notes that Ezekiel is addressing the Jewish nation here, where he had talked regarding other nations in the previous chapters. Now, verse 6, it says, Now, as regards the watchman, in case he sees the sword, coming, and he actually does not blow the horn, and the people itself gets no warning at all, and the sword comes and takes away from them soul, for its own error, it itself must be taken away, but its blood I shall ask back from the hand of the watchman himself. Now, as regards you, O son of man, a watchman is what I have made you to the house of Israel. And at my mouth you must hear the word and give them warning from me. When I say to someone wicked, O wicked one, you will positively die, but you actually do not speak out to warn the wicked one from his way. He himself, as a wicked one, will die in his own error. But his blood I shall ask back at your own hand. But as regards you, in case you actually warn someone wicked from his way, for him to turn back from it, but he actually does not turn back from his way, he himself will die in his own error, whereas you yourself will certainly deliver your own soul. Now as regards you, O son of man, say to the house of Israel, Thus your people have said, Because our revolts and our sins are upon us, and in them we are rotting away, how then shall we keep living? Say to them, As I am alive, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. I take delight not in the death of the wicked one, but in that someone wicked turns back from his way and actually keeps living. Turn back from your bad ways, for why is it that you should die, O house of Israel? And as for you, O son of man, say to the sons of your people, The righteousness of the righteous one will not itself deliver him in the day of his revolt. But as regards the wickedness of the wicked one, he will not be made to stumble by it in the day of his turning back from his wickedness, nor will even anyone having righteousness be able to keep living because of it in the day of his sinning. When I say to the righteous one, you will positively keep living, and he himself actually trusts in his own righteousness and does injustice, all his own righteous acts will not be remembered, but for his injustice that he has done, for this he will die. And when I say to the wicked one, you will positively die, and he actually turns back from his sin and carries on justice and righteousness, and the wicked one returns the very thing pledged, pays back the very things taken by robbery, and actually walks in the very statutes of life by not doing injustice, he will positively keep living. He will not die. None of his sins with which he has sinned will be remembered against him. Justice and righteousness are what he has carried on. He will positively keep living, and the sons of your people have said the way of Jehovah is not adjusted right. But as for them, it is their way that is not adjusted right. When someone righteous turns back from his righteousness and actually does injustice, he must also die for them. And when someone wicked turns back from his wickedness and actually carries on justice and righteousness, it will be on account of them that he himself will keep living. And you people have said the way of Jehovah is not adjusted right. It will be each one according to his ways that I shall judge you, O house of Israel. At length it occurred in the 12th year, in the 10th month, on the 5th day of the month of our exile, that there came to me the escaped one from Jerusalem, saying, the city has been struck down. So that's verse 21, where we previously saw and looked ahead at this verse, 33:21, where an escaped one came from Jerusalem. This is about, well, more than a year after the striking down of the city, which was in the 11th year and the 10th day of the 5th month in that year of the, in the 11th year, that is, of the exile. Now the very hand of Jehovah had come to be upon me in the evening before the coming of the escaped one, and he proceeded to open my mouth prior to that one's coming to me in the morning. And my mouth was opened, and I proved to be speechless no longer. And the word of Jehovah began to occur to me, saying, Son of man, the inhabitants of these devastated places are saying, even concerning the soil of Israel, Abraham happened to be just one, and yet he took possession of the land, and we are many. To us the land has been given as something to possess. Therefore say to them, this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said, with blood you keep eating, and your eyes you keep lifting to your dungy idols, and blood you keep pouring out. So should you possess the land? You have depended upon your sword, you have done a detestable thing, and you have defiled each one the wife of his companion. So should you possess the land? This is what you should say to them. This is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. As I am alive, surely the ones who are in the devastated places will fall by the sword itself, and the one who is upon the surface of the field. To the wild beast I shall certainly give him for food, and those who are in the strong places and in the caves will die by the pestilence itself. And I shall actually make the land a desolate waste, even a desolation. And the pride of its strength must be made to cease, and the mountains of Israel must be laid desolate with no one passing through. And they will have to know that I am Jehovah when I make the land desolate, waste. A desolate waste, even a desolation, on account of all their detestable things that they have done. And as for you, O son of man, the sons of your people are speaking with one another about you beside the walls and in the entrances of the houses. And the one has spoken with the other, each one with his brother, saying, come, please, and hear what the word is that is going forth from Jehovah. And they will come in to you like the coming in of people and sit before you as my people. And they will certainly hear your words, but these they will not do. For with their mouth they are expressing lustful desires, and after their unjust gain is where their heart is going. And look, you are to them like a song of sensuous loves, like one with a pretty voice and playing a stringed instrument well. And they will certainly hear your words, but there are none doing them. And when it comes true, look, it must come true. This is verse 33 of chapter 33. They will also have to know that a prophet himself had proved to be in the midst of them. That's the end of Ezekiel 33. Interesting, there were 33 verses in chapter 33 of Ezekiel. And now Matthew chapter 7. Stop judging that you may not be judged. For with what judgment you are judging, you will be judged. And with the measure that you are measuring out, they will measure out to you. Why then do you look at the straw that is in your brother's eye, but do not consider the rafter in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, allow me to extract the straw from your eye, when look, a rafter is in your own eye? Hypocrite! First extract the rafter from your own eye, and then you will see clearly how to extract the straw from your brother's eye. Do not give what is holy to dogs, neither throw your pearls before swine, that they may never trample them under their feet and turn around and rip you open. Keep on asking, and it will be given you. Keep on seeking, and you will find. Keep on knocking, and it will be opened to you. For everyone asking receives, and everyone seeking finds, and to everyone knocking it will be opened. Indeed, who is the man among you whom his son asks for bread? He will not hand him a stone, will he? Or perhaps he will ask for a fish. He will not hand him a serpent, will he? Therefore, If you, although being wicked, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more so will your Father who is in the heavens give good things to those asking him? All things, therefore, that you want men to do to you, you also must likewise do to them. This, in fact, is what the law and the prophets mean. Go in through the narrow gate, because broad and spacious is the road leading off into destruction, and many are the ones going in through it. Whereas narrow is the gate and cramped the road leading off into life, and few are the ones finding it. Be on the watch for the false prophets that come to you in sheep's covering, but inside they are ravenous wolves. By their fruits you will recognize them. Never do people gather grapes from thorns or figs from thistles, do they? Likewise, every good tree produces fine fruit, but every rotten tree produces worthless fruit. A good tree cannot bear worthless fruit, neither can a rotten tree produce fine fruit. Every tree not producing fine fruit gets cut down and thrown into the fire. Really, by their fruits you will recognize those men. Not everyone saying to me, Lord, Lord, will enter into the kingdom of the heavens, but the one doing the will of my Father who is in the heavens will. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and expel demons in your name and perform many powerful works in your name? And yet then I will confess to them, I never knew you. Get away from me, you workers of lawlessness. Therefore, everyone that hears these sayings of mine and does them will be likened to a discreet man who built his house upon the rock mass. And the rain poured down, and the floods came, and the winds blew and lashed against that house, but it did not cave in, for it had been founded upon the rock mass. Furthermore, everyone hearing these sayings of mine and not doing them will be likened to a foolish man who built his house upon the sand. And the rain poured down, and the floods came, and the winds blew and struck against that house, and it caved in, and its collapse was great. Now when Jesus finished these sayings, the effect was that the crowds were astounded at his way of teaching, for he was teaching them as a person having authority, and not as their scribes. That's the end of Matthew chapter 7. We've got less than a minute. Now the scribes, of course, and the Pharisees, they had the oral tradition of their forefathers that later on became the Talmud and the Mishnah in a written form of that oral tradition. But they followed oral tradition rather than the word of God. They had interpretations for all the scriptures, and they didn't therefore teach with authority. They had the authority of men, whereas Jesus taught with the authority of God, Jehovah himself. Well, that's just about exactly it for today. We ran out of time just about right now, in a few seconds. It's January 25th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 2:17 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you. And this is Dusty, the Moon Dust Watch. And this is Phoebe, the Casio Digital Watch, on my behalf, saying bye for now.